Welcome to this introduction to the Royal Shakespeare. Lasts for approximately 3 hours, including a 20-minute interval. The audio describers, in order of speaking, are Gethin Edwards and Julia Grundy. Tanika Gupta's play explores the parallel relationships and experiences of four main characters, Queen Victoria and her servant Abdul Karim, and Rani Das, an Indian ayah, and Hari, a Lascar sailor. Spanning 13 years over the golden era of empire, this story also blends the experiences of Indian ayahs and the Lascars who worked on the ships carrying trade goods, alongside the story of Dadabhai Naoroji, the first Indian politician to be elected as a member of parliament. This epic tale reveals how socially diverse and complex the Asian presence was in 19th century Britain. The thrust portion of the Swan Theatre's stage extends into the audience, with seating on three sides and diagonal walkways stretching from the front, left and right corners of the stage. The back portion of the stage lies through a high, proscenium-like opening of bare brickwork. The front and back halves of the stage are also separated by an enormous ring that frames the large opening. It extends to the full height and width of the performance space, has an antique frosted glass quality to it, and is actually illuminated from within. It changes colour constantly throughout the play to help build and enhance the mood of the various scenes. At times, it's the gently rippling blue of the sea or the electric lightning flashes of a storm. At other times, it becomes purple or a cool silver grey or the rippling oranges and reds of dancing flames. Its design is intended to evoke a range of qualities, including a sense of the compass, community, collectiveness, connectedness, and journeys across the globe. As well as being split front and back, the action is also divided vertically. A mezzanine level, roughly 10 feet off the stage, runs along the back wall, and a square platform is built out towards us from its centre over the rear half of the stage, supported on straight wooden legs. This front platform is accessed from the stage by a wrought iron spiral staircase to its right. A tall ladder rises straight up from the stage to the left of the platform, leading out of sight high above. Although other characters do appear there now and then, the mezzanine level is mostly where the activities of Queen Victoria and her household take place, with everyone else living out their lives on the stage below. Additionally, at this same high level, there are square openings in the walls facing us, one to the left and right of the stage, each surrounded by substantial picture frames like something from a museum. Victoria and her lady-in-waiting appear in voids beyond these frames at various points in the play, seated in quiet conversation as the story unfolds on the stage below, creating an impression rather like living oil paintings. The stage itself appears constructed of long, broad, dark brown boards like the deck of a ship. Indeed, at the start of the play, two lengths of ship's rigging are tethered to the stage, to the left and right, coming together as the apex of a triangle high above. There are 2 6-foot runs of square grills to the centre rear and front of the thrust. Some of the grills are hinged and open like trapdoors as if into a ship's hold. A final feature is the low secondary stage that can be rolled forward between the legs of the platform and functions as a smaller, self-contained interior set, open on the front and sides with a curtained window and sometimes gas lighting and framed pictures on its papered back wall. By turns, it serves as a captain's cabin, as Lord Oakham's study with a Persian carpet, desk and wooden chairs, as a parlour in an ayah's home furnished with wooden benches, and as Dadabhai Naoroji's office with an armchair, a steamer trunk and a desk cluttered with paperwork. There are many props in this production, small and large. There are desks and elegant, dainty tables draped with fine tablecloths of patterned silk or of lace. Parlours and offices have chairs, formal and informal. The scenes on ship, at the opening of the play and in Tilbury Docks later on, are peppered with crates, barrels, ropes, luggage, lanterns, a canvas tarpaulin, strings of Union Jack bunting, even an entire elephant tusk. Lasker Sally's boarding house adds tankards and beer bottles to the mix, and Rani carries her meagre possessions with her in a faded red shoulder bag. There are a matching pair of simple wooden steps, rather like a short, open-sided flight of stairs, the top step coming to around knee height, that are moved about by the cast in various scenes to act as impromptu furniture to be sat or stood upon. Offices have books and piles of papers. The Queen is served from a silver tea set and reads correspondence stored in a neat red box with a hinged lid. The life and bustle of India is evoked with a chai seller's handcart, piles of bright fabric, garlands of orange flowers, wide platters piled high with spices and other delicacies, a statue of a Hindu deity. Towards the end of the play, company's new production of The Empress, written by Tanika Gupta and directed by Pooja Ghai. The performance, Queen Victoria walks with a silver-tipped ebony cane or is pushed in a wooden wheeled chair, a tartan blanket over her shoulders. And our last glimpse of the Queen is in a glass-sided open coffin set on a wheeled table which is concealed by a skirt of white satin. The story begins in the final years of the 19th century. Wealthy gentlemen wear frock coats with cravats or ties. Their ladies' silk dresses have tightly corseted bodices and full skirts down to the floor. Working men wear heavy wool trousers with shirts or vests and soft caps. Dresses are out of reach for poorer women. They wear blouses and skirts in wool or cotton with shawls and scarves. At the start of the story, Queen Victoria has been on the throne for over 50 years. And she sets the tone for the country. Sober colours and sober behaviour, on the surface at least. The Queen is 67, 4 feet 11 inches with a rounded figure, corseted into her habitual dress of black silk glittering with jet, the clothes of widowhood that she had adopted ever since the death of her husband, the Prince Consort, many years before. Her face is slim, her eyes bright and shrewd, her grey hair parted down the centre and drawn back into a bun. A lace cap with a short veil, sometimes white, sometimes black, perches on her head. For public appearances, a blue silk sash across her chest adds a splash of colour, along with diamond rings and insignia, and a glittering coronet. The Queen's usual expression is humourless, not to say grumpy, but in private, her face lights into unexpected smiles with bursts of laughter, often to the surprise of her courtiers. Her principal lady-in-waiting, Lady Sarah, is in her middle years, tall, with perfect deportment, looming alongside the Queen. Her chestnut hair is immaculately coiffed, and her gaze severe. Her dress is of shimmering crimson silk, with a bustle and short train far showier than Victoria's. A brooch glistens on her breast, and a purse hangs from a gold belt at her waist, as well as keys and a dainty watch. Outdoors, she dons a velvet jacket. Abdul Karim has arrived on the ship from India, a gift from the Viceroy intended to wait at table on the Queen. He's a tall young man with chiselled features and a neatly razored beard. He first appears well-dressed in a long blue jacket over blue shalwar kameez and white leggings with a scarlet turban. A crisply folded cream stole with a delicate check pattern falls over one shoulder. His correct manner and ingenious smile are mixed with an air of quiet confidence. Finding favour with the Queen, his clothes become ever more splendid, impressive in white and gold or scarlet, adorned with the Queen's VR insignia. Another passenger on the incoming ship is Rani Das, a 16-year-old heir to a homecoming British family. She has a fine-featured face, her dark eyes big with wonder and curiosity at all the new sights, ready at her mistress's call with cheerful efficiency, darting with bird-like swiftness. Her glossy black hair is tied in a single plait down her back. She is tidily dressed in a white sari edged in green, her bare feet in sandals. Rani is befriended by Hari, one of the Lascars who crew the ship. He's a little older than her, of medium height, with a broad chest and ruffled dark hair above an open face with stubble across his jaw. His engaging smile is all part of his generally cheerful demeanour. He's dressed like the other Lascars in shabby blue linen tunic and loose white trousers. The Hindu politician Dadabhai Naroji is also a passenger. He's in his 60s, a slim man with iron-grey hair. His broad face is partially hidden under his long, thick grey beard, and he wears round, wire-rimmed spectacles. Naoroji dresses in a brown frock coat, waistcoat and trousers, with a silk cravat at his neck. The young lawyer, M.K. Gandhi, is in awe of the older man. Gandhi is slim, with bright eyes in a narrow face. His wavy black hair is cut short, and he has a wispy moustache. He's smart in a three-piece light brown suit, edged with crimson ribboning and a cravat. Arriving in London, the docks are filled with sailors, workmen, traders, and prostitutes. Lascar Sally is the proprietor of a boarding house cum brothel for the Lascar sailors. She's a slender woman with a slim face under a bird's nest explosion of chestnut hair. She and her houseful of prostitutes leave nothing to the imagination in their underwear of skimpy chemises, corsets, bloomers and stockings. Shawls and scarves provide minimum cover. A swathe of scarlet-patterned silk is stretched across Sally's shoulders. It unfolds into a dressing gown. When necessary, Sally tones down her appearance in a subdued blouse and skirt. Firoza is another Ayah in her 30s, her black hair drawn back into a neat bun from her oval face, with dark eyes and an easy smile. She has adopted Western dress, a white blouse above a beige-patterned skirt, a brown shawl drawn round her shoulders. Georgina, smartly attired and with her hair well-dressed, is the brisk housekeeper to Lord John Oakham. Oakham is a well-built man of medium height, his mid-brown hair parted down the centre with a full beard. In his study, he wears black waistcoat and trousers over a full white shirt. The Lascar sailors all wear the same uniform, faded and worn blue linen tunics with a narrow white zigzag pattern across the chest and back, tied with belts at the waist. Their loose white trousers are grubby and creased. They wear round caps, shabby turbans, or strips of fabric wrapped round their heads. The Lascars are controlled by the Serang, a brutal, angry man, stocky and broad-chested with a shaven head. His clothes are smarter, and he enforces discipline with a heavy stick. The European sailors on board are better treated and better dressed, in uniform of blue tunics with square collars above wide bell-bottom trousers. Among the other characters are Mrs. Susan Matthews, Rani's employer, a small, neat, smartly dressed lady with an imperious gaze. William, Mary and Charlotte are philanthropists and supporters of Dadabhai Naoroji. They are all dressed in sober black. Young politician Jinnah is of medium height with an open face. He wears a dark suit and the black astrakhan hat that would become symbolic of his appearance in later years. Rani's daughter, Asha, is a teenager with wavy black hair and a rounded face. All other parts, including palace servants, ship's passengers, soldiers, sailors, prostitutes, ayahs, and Londoners, are played by members of the cast. Queen Victoria is played by Alexandra Gilbreath, and her lady-in-waiting, Lady Sarah, by Francesca Faradini. Queen Victoria's Hindu companion and teacher, known as the Munshi Abdul Karim, is played by Raj Bajaj. Rani Das, a young Ayah, is played by Tanya Katya, and Hari, the Lascar sailor who befriends her, by Aaron Gill. Other passengers on board the ship to England are politician Dadabhai Naoroji, played by Simon Rivers, and young lawyer M.K. Gandhi, played by Anish Roy. In England, Lord John Oakham is played by Oliver Hembra, and his housekeeper Georgina by Miriam Grace Edwards. Lascar Sally is played by Nicola Stevenson, and Firoza and Ayah by Avita Jay. Lascar sailors are played by Joe Usher, Nicola Stevenson, Anyebe Godwin, Premi Tamang, and Anish Roy. The Serang is played by Anyebe Godwin. Mrs. Susan Matthews is played by Sarah Moyle. William, Mary, and Charlotte are played by Oliver Hembra, Sarah Moyle, and Miriam Grace Edwards. Jinnah is played by Chris Nyack, the painter Rudolf Swoboda by Oliver Hembra, and Rani's daughter, Asha, by Lauren Patel. All other parts are played by members of the company, which also includes Tom Milligan. The designer is Rosa Maggiore, with lighting by Matt Haskins. Music and sound by Ben and Max Ringham. Movement is by Wayne Parsons. Fights and Intimacy are by Rachel Bone Williams and Ruth Cooper Brown. The music director is Hanai Patani. Voice and Dialect is by Gurikan Kaur. And the director is Pooja Guy. 16-year-old Rani Das is travelling to England on a boat from India, looking after the children of an English family on the voyage. Her bright and caring personality is noticed and admired by a young Lascar, Hari, and by fellow travellers Abdul Karim and Dadabai Nauroji. When they step off the boat at Tilbury Docks, Rani is cruelly dismissed by her employers. Distraught, she seeks comfort with Hari and takes shelter from the streets of London with him in a boarding house run by Lascar Sally. Early next morning, Rani leaves Lascar Sally's, and Hari desperately searches for her to no avail. Hari is forced to fulfil his contract with the clan line and reluctantly sets sail to work on trade ships transporting goods across the empire. Interspersed with Rani's story, the play follows the relationship between Abdul Karim and Queen Victoria. When Abdul steps off the boat, he is destined to serve the Queen as a breakfast waiter, but an unusual friendship develops between the pair. Abdul becomes Victoria's closest confidant, and she gradually elevates his position to that of Munshi, teacher. This growing friendship is closely scrutinized by a horrified Lady Sarah and members of the Queen's court. Desperate and alone, Rani heads to the docks to try and beg passage back to India, where she meets the eccentric and highly experienced dyer, Feroza. Following Feroza's advice, Rani touts her domestic servant's wares and eventually gets the attention of a housekeeper, Georgina, who employs her as an ayah for Lord and Lady Oakham. At first, Rani looks as if she's landed on her feet, until she meets Lord Oakham, who takes advantage of her. Rani falls pregnant with Lord Oakham's child and is unceremoniously thrown out of the house, destitute and alone on the streets of London once more. Fortunately, Feroza and Lascar Sally find her and give her and her baby shelter. Aldgate Home for Ayahs, 1891. While boarding in the Home for Ayahs, Rani meets Dadabai Nauroji again. Far from the Rani he first met on the ship, she now has a child, Asha, and has educated herself. She tells Dadabai that she wants to support his campaign to be elected to Parliament. Dadabai employs Rani as his assistant, and the two become as close as father and daughter. In 1892, Dadabai is elected to be the first Indian Member of Parliament, representing the constituency of Finsbury. Never forgetting Rani, Hari learns to read and write and sends letters to the only address he has for her, Lascar Sally's. We see Hari's journey across the globe, working on the ships which carry cargo between the British colonies. He is badly treated by the English captains and becomes a leader of the disabused Lascars. Through a chain of characters, Hari's letters finally reach Rani. Rani and Dadabai stand at Tilbury Docks, ready to board the ship to India. Abdul Karim boards the ship, dismissed and returning home after the death of his royal companion. Reunited with Hari, Rani does not board the ship. After 13 years separated by oceans, connected only by thoughts of one another, Rani, Hari, and Asha start a new chapter in their story, waving off the ship from the gangways of the docks. This concludes the audio introduction to The Empress. To request audio notes to future RSC productions, please call 01789 331 275 or email access@rsc.org.uk.